Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, on the WDIY app, and on many streaming services. Today is June 24th, 2026. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing up at 51,848, the NASDAQ down at 25,476, and the S&P down at 7,358. Our topic tonight, elements of financial planning, but with a different twist. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Jen is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Again, you can speak live with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking on air, you can just give your question to Jen and she'll bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. I realized after announcing the topic last week that I had talked about the elements of your financial life just a couple months ago. It is a topic that should be addressed frequently because of the value that it can bring to those who pay attention. I thought tonight what I might do is take that topic a little deeper and broader. Basically, the elements of your financial life that you hear me speak of from time to time are cash flow, investments, taxes, retirement planning, risk management, and estate planning. So you hold your hands up and you tick these six elements off. Always a little bit more to that, but these are the basic ones, and we certainly like to always make sure we're covering them in our annual review meetings with clients. So cash flow, investments, taxes, retirement planning, risk management, and estate planning. And I typically talk about those and the importance of addressing all of those various elements, because an action in one typically impacts, elements in the other categories, sometimes more than one. So you want to be careful of that. And of these, there are numbers that need to be understood, considered, projected, and analyzed. So typically when we're talking about cash flow, we're asking about number, what is your cash flow? What are your bank balances, investments? We talk about risk tolerance. We talk about the allocation of the investments, taxes. We talk about the impact of the different kinds of income, retirement planning. When are you? Are you? Did you already? And then tapping retirement accounts, risk management. That's insurance, basically, making sure you have risk tolerance in investments, but also risk covered in life planning, whether it's life insurance, property and casualty, long-term care, that type, health insurance, and estate planning, of course. So those numbers, again, numbers around kind of all of those, but on the periphery of those elements, there are considerations not as definitive. And I think this is really, really important. It completely adds the flavor, the temperature, the spice of all of those elements. And that is those other considerations such as emotions around our financial planning, like love, anxiety, fear, exuberance. Then we have relationships, of course, relationships, spouses, children, parents, grandchildren, partners, could be even philanthropy, our charitable partners in those relationships. Health, longevity, health concerns, good health. Extenuating circumstances that could crop up from those things I just mentioned. Extenuating circumstances around those relationships we may have, family members, again, children, spouses. What are the extenuating circumstances that we might have to plan for that, again, we might not be putting numbers to? It's an emotional, you know, context. Philanthropy. How do we feel about philanthropy? Are we philanthropic? Are we being taken advantage of? Are we being smart about our philanthropy? We also need to have considerations for responsibility. Responsibility of those relationships that we may have. Again, whether it's spouses or children or grandchildren or parents or siblings, nieces, nephews, friends. What responsibility do they have of themselves? What responsibility do we have for them? What responsibility might we need from them for us? And capacity. What do I mean by capacity? Capacity of those people in, you know, that surround us, the capacity of them to help us, either as a personal representative, a power of attorney, capacity to be a caregiver. What is their mental capacity, health capacity, time capacity? What kind of time do the people in our lives have for us if we need to rely on them? So it's time, temperament, ethics. What is the capacity? So while the numbers might say one thing, and there are financial advisors who can run the numbers, I think it's really more than that. And sometimes that is the much harder part to consider. So I thought tonight when we're talking or would have been talking about the elements of financial planning that my regular listeners and my clients know, I harp on all the time, the cash flow, the investments, the retirement planning, the risk management, estate planning, and investments. These elements are just as important. And I will add that when people are working with a financial advisor, unless you're sharing some of these kind of intimate concerns that you may have, let's call it these, you know, I wish I could, instead of the elements of your financial life, maybe the soft factors, not the hard numbers, but the soft factors of financial planning of your financial life. It's really critical to share those because if you don't share, you may be setting either yourself up or setting your loved ones, your heirs, or the charities to setting them up for circumstances that are more difficult to traverse, more difficult to manage. And if your advisor is aware of these, issues or could be really good things. Issues don't have to be bad issues. They could be really good issues. If your financial advisor is not aware of them, then it's a little bit harder to plan for them. And so I want to talk tonight about what kinds of considerations we should be thinking about and, being vulnerable in sharing that information because there are so many ways to plan around any of these, kind of life events that may happen, life considerations that aren't necessarily financial, but again, more like on the periphery, as I said, not as definitive as running numbers, but come into play in that decision making that you would need to do. So after this first break, we're going to talk about the emotions around some of the financial planning, the elements of financial planning. What are the emotions? How do those impact, what we're doing? Why does it matter? Why do we have to think about it even or address it? So we'll talk about that. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8255. 8810, and you can call and leave your question with Jen, or if you want to talk live on air, you can do that as well. Again, 610-758-8810, and we'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know there are many ways you can support the programs you love on WDIY? You can make a gift of appreciated stock or mutual funds. A powerful way to give, and you may avoid capital gains taxes. If you're 70 and a half or older, you can also make a tax-smart gift directly from your IRA. And if you have a donor-advised fund, you can donate directly from the account and benefit from a more tax- and cost-efficient way of giving. To learn more, contact Seamus McGrogan at 610-694-8100, extension 4.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY, also on the WDIY app and many streaming services. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Jen is on standby. You can either just give her the question, she'll write it down, and I'll answer it. Or if you'd like to talk live on air, just let her know that as well. So tonight, a little twist on the elements of financial planning. We're talking more about the, you know, the personal consideration. So one of the those elements I said was emotions. So there are a lot of emotions around money, a lot of emotions around, you know, how one saves, how one spends, how one earns, the expectations around that. The expectations are is an emotion as well. So emotions such as love, anxiety, fear, or exuberance. What am I talking about that? Well, sometimes love, what do they say? Love is blind. So sometimes love can be blind and we might not see what's, you know, right in front of us. And that could mean if you're in a relationship and you're not paying attention, you're just caught up in the, you know, the euphoria of it, the romance of it. We do have to be a little practical sometimes when we're thinking about long-term partners, or if we are already in a relationship. We don't want love to blind us. We do have to be a little bit practical, a little bit grown up. I'm the last one who wants to be a grown up, but we do have to be a little bit of grown up when we're talking about responsibility, and we can't let love blind us to, you know, red flags or things that might be out there that we, you know, might not have considered or think we need to consider when we're in that euphoric stage, perhaps. So love could keep us from seeing someone who might not be spending responsibility. That could be a sign that that might not be a good relationship. Even if you love the person, it just may not be the right fit for the long term, you know, for your own goals for the long term. If you want to eventually have a home, a family, and you know, you want to pay attention to how that person might be spending. Are they spending frivolously? Are they spending responsibly? There's a difference. Do they have credit card debt? If they do, where did that come from? And sometimes that could be, you know, circumstances beyond their control. So it's important to have that conversation. And are they willing to share with you their outlook on, you know, money and spending and saving and what their financial goals are over their lifetime or for their future? So this is kind of like new in a relationship where you kind of are ahead of irreversible decisions and think about what that partner might look like in that. Love could also come into play with our own children, with our parents. We love our children, we love our parents, and maybe we're spending at abandon for our children because we just want to give them everything, you know, everything that we didn't have, perhaps. And you're not always thinking about your own financial future. You know, they always talk about the air mask in the airplane. You want to make sure that the adult gets the oxygen first before they help the child. And the same thing applies when people talk about financial planning. They'll say, make sure that you're saving for your own retirement before you start, you know, giving all the money away to the kids. because you love them. You just have to be careful about, you know, setting a good example and setting expectations as well. And the same thing could happen even helping other family members that you love or partners that you love, that you are not always thinking clearly about your own circumstances and situations. So be aware of that. I'll sprinkle in some stories here and there to kind of demonstrate what this means and what this looks like and why I'm talking about this and why it's so important. Many, many, many years ago, when I first started at the firm at Valley National, I had a lovely, lovely client. I won't disclose his name or his occupation. I'll just give some little hints of some things I had observed early on. This was very new in my career. And I had noticed he had recently retired and was taking large amounts of money out of his retirement accounts. And, you know, I'm a curious person and, you know, love financial planning. And at that time, we really, this was very beginning of my career, that we really weren't necessarily thinking about all the financial planning the way I do today. It was the dawn of it where I said, hey, I noticed you're taking these large amounts out of your retirement accounts. You know, is there a reason for that? What's going on? And the answer was, I'm helping my kids. And it was twofold, two children. And one, he was helping with the grandchildren's education, which a lot of grandparents do. And the other, he was helping one of the children buy real estate. They wanted to do real estate investments, couldn't afford it themselves. And so this client was helping him. And I noticed this pattern. It wasn't just a one-time thing. It was a pattern over a few years. And I started to notice that the distributions weren't keeping up with the returns because they were quite sizable distributions. And my fear was, we had a married couple, you know, husband and wife, and of course, love their children, helping out the kids. And I don't know how much the wife was participating in those decisions. But my concern was for, if something happened to the husband, what were the the spouse's cash flow options going to be? And I felt that there was going to be a shortage of funds. And, you know, in the end, that's exactly what happened. And I cautioned. I said, please, please, you have to slow down the withdrawals on these accounts, because he was withdrawing from retirement accounts, which have huge income tax consequences when you're pulling money. I like when people have different buckets of money that they can pull from to kind of mitigate some of the tax consequences. But in these circumstances, all the money he was pulling was from the retirement accounts. The more you pull out, the more taxes you had to pay. And it was just, you know, working that balance down faster than I thought, you know, was appropriate. And I warned him, you know, there's not going to be anything left for your wife if you continue at this rate, or him, you know, at this rate. And sure enough, ran the assets down quite a bit. And he passes away. And then the surviving spouse is left with, guess what? Not enough money, and working into her 70s in order to afford cash flow, and then ended up having to sell the family home and move in with one of the children. So, you know, love does some strange things to us. And what are those emotions? Is it love for the children? Is it some kind of guilt over, you know, I didn't get anything from my parents? You know, I was, sometimes you'll see people who grew up with nothing, and then they spend wildly, or they grew up with nothing and then they want to give their kids everything. So sometimes we have to understand the emotion around why we're doing certain things. So that's kind of like a tidbit on love. Let me talk for a minute about anxiety. So the emotion of anxiety. What does anxiety cause? And to me, anxiety is a little bit different than fear, but they're very much connected. But anxiety sometimes demonstrates itself in someone gets very nervous and then they might act impulsively. And they could have some knee-jerk reactions. They might not be making sound judgments because the anxiety is overwhelming. It could actually even sometimes freeze them, meaning you can't make any action because you're overwhelmed with anxiety. And that's not always a good emotion to have either, because if it keeps you from acting when you should, then you may miss opportunities in your financial planning where the numbers matter. The emotion is driving it instead of, you know, sound investment decisions or, you know, spending decisions or whatever it might be. I'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Are you saying out with the old, in with the new when it comes to your old car? WDIY's vehicle donation program will turn your ride into your favorite programs on Lehigh Valley Public Radio. The towing is free, all the paperwork is taken care of, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about a new twist, a different twist on the elements of financial planning, a very, very important part of financial planning, though. And that is those kind of elements on the periphery that aren't necessarily the numbers or driven by numbers, but more around the feelings we have in managing our finances. So initially, I'm talking about the emotions. We just talked about love. We're talking about anxiety and fear and exuberance now. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable doing that, give your question to Jen. And you can also submit questions through the website yourfinancialchoices.com, as well as show ideas. I really, really appreciate show ideas. I just remembered that I had someone send in a show idea, and I promised I would do a show on that and put it on my calendar, and I need to slot it in here somewhere, so I'll make sure I still do that. But going back to these elements that we need to pay attention to when we're talking about financial planning, the anxiety, the fear, and again, they're a tiny bit different, but if the anxiety could keep us from acting, so could fear. In that, if we procrastinate because we're so afraid, we're so overwhelmed that we can't take any action, we're frozen, we may miss opportunities. May miss opportunities to, you know, benefit ourselves or to, you know, keep us out of danger as well. Meaning, you know, maybe something's a bad investment decision and you're so anxious about it. You made this investment decision and gosh darn it, now you think I shouldn't have done that, but now I'm wringing my hands. I don't know what I did. What was I thinking? And you don't act at all. That is, you know, procrastinating on kind of resolving those decisions that we made that perhaps were not so good. There's all kinds of psychology around this. You know, it's behavioral finance, basically. You know, they have books on it. But you know, let's bring it down to a simple level, because I'm, you know, most of us aren't going to read a book on behavioral finance, but we can try to tap into looking at ourselves and our habits objectively, and that will help you move forward, guaranteed, no matter what, if you can try to, you know, look at this. And if it really is a serious problem where these emotions keep you from acting in your own best interest, then, you know, there's counselors out there who can help with that too. And it's about recognizing when you might need that help to get over that hump or navigate these, you know, these, what do I want, roadblocks that you might have. So where else can fear or exuberance play a role in our financial planning to perhaps our detriment, perhaps, you know, our betterment too. But, you know, typically when we're talking about fear or exuberance, what I'm worried about is fear is keeping you from maybe perhaps investing. When we talk about risk tolerance in an investment portfolio. That risk tolerance is how much risk are you willing to take on? And when people take risk, they're hoping for a better return. So risk reward, typically the more risk you take, you expect a better return. There are no guarantees ever. And even, you know, as a financial show where this is for education purposes and there are no guarantees, but typically when we talk about investing, we're talking about investing in whether it's the stock market or the bond market and some allocation or exposure to stocks and exposure to bonds. And there could be a very disciplined approach to that. And typically any advisor or if you're self-managing, you're going through some type of a risk tolerance questionnaire asking about your timeline. How old are you? When are you going to need this money? If the markets are bad, do you tend to get out of the market? If the market's good, what do you tend to do? Can you sleep at night? So there's various different kinds of questions they ask for these risk tolerance questionnaires. But basically, that helps an advisor stay within the parameters of what this client can tolerate. And why are we doing that? That in itself is trying to mitigate the impact of someone's emotions. Meaning if someone comes in and says, I'm super aggressive, and the minute the market takes a 20% drop, they're saying, I want out, I want out. Well, I say to that person, then you were not aggressive. Then you didn't, I don't talk like that, but I think you weren't aggressive. If the market took a 20% dip and you said you were aggressive, then, and you say you want out, then you really weren't someone who was aggressive, because an aggressive investor has to understand that they could have those kinds of swings. Now, if it means they're reacting emotionally, they have fear or anxiety. Now, there could be someone who comes in and says, you know, I can't sleep at night. I'm very nervous. I want something very conservative. And, you know, you go to some kind of a preservation model and all of a sudden they're coming in and saying to you, why am I not getting the returns my neighbor's getting? Why am I not getting the returns I'm seeing in the market or on the television every night? You know, I want those kinds of returns. Well, if you answer to risk tolerance to say, you know, you were preservation minded because you were afraid you needed the money today, you can't sleep at night, then all of a sudden you're saying, I wish, I wish, I wish. That is exuberation, perhaps. That's exuberance. You're getting excited and wanting to kind of follow the crowd. And that's not always the best thing either. Because the minute someone who says their preservation mind decides to go, you know, all in on the market, that's when, you know, there's a correction. So the whole point of those risk tolerance really is almost probably behavioral finance based, trying to figure out what is your emotional roller coaster IQ in investing? All right, so let's pay attention to the emotions, love, anxiety, fear, exuberance, and then the impact that has on our financial planning decisions. Now, I just gave an example of investments in those categories, but that could, you know, apply in, you know, other parts of the financial life too. So for example, someone might have, you know, fear about taxes, I suppose, or exuberance about some business deal. It doesn't even have to be investments necessarily. It could be an investment in, you know, the next best thing they think is happening. So just be aware of that. So then I also said, what other kind of elements of financial planning beyond the numbers do we have to pay attention to? And I had mentioned relationships. And what do I mean by that? Well, you have to have an understanding of the relationships of the people in your circle, in your, whether it's your family, your friend group, that support group, whoever's going to be around you, those relationships you have, your partners, your spouses, or just partners, you might not even be a spouse, who is going to be there for you in your time of need, whether it's emotional support, financial support, healthcare support, whatever that could be, who are those people in that relationship? And then let's sit back and think about what kind of responsibility you might need them to help you with. What responsibility do you have toward them? What responsibility do they have toward you? And will they be able to be that responsible person for you in the event that you have an event? We need to understand those relationships. Now, we're halfway through the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me, or you can talk off air. I'm going to have Eric stay on the line. Eric, we want you to stay on the line because we do have to go to a hard break right now. But stay on the line, and I'll take your question when we come back. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, as James mentioned. Thank you, James. James, can we put Eric through? He's on line one. Eric, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Laurie.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good.
I used to answer the phone for you a few years ago.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. That's right. how can I help you?
Well, I had a question about, I know you guys are in Northampton County. I'm in Lehigh County.
Uh-huh.
And they're talking about a wealth tax.
Yeah.
And I talked to different people about it. And they had different opinions about it. One of them was that it was illegal. And I wanted to know if you have any information about it or if you could tell me anything about it.
Well, I'm not sure if it's illegal or not, but I know that we used to have, I mean, they're calling this a wealth tax, but we used to call, there was something called an intangibles tax, Eric. Do you remember that?
No.
Okay.
I don't remember that.
Many, many years ago, I worked at a law firm, and there was an intangibles tax, and I remember every year there was always like clients or, you know, individuals who would be trying to like move assets around to avoid the intangibles tax. I don't recall it being like a critically hefty tax or anything, but that intangibles tax applied to things like investment accounts. And they are proposing something like that, I think, for Lehigh County. Whether it goes through or not, I don't know. Sometimes, frankly, I'm going to be honest with you, a lot of times I'm aware of legislation or I'm aware of tax revenue proposals, but I almost don't want to pay attention to it until it's, you know, put in place, because you can worry about it and think about it. And sometimes these ideas never go through. But basically, based on like what I know from the intangibles tax, it used to be kind of based on like investment balances. Typically, it doesn't apply to personal residences or cars or personal property or retirement accounts. To retirement accounts, whether they're IRAs or 401ks. So, Eric, for the most part, a lot of people's assets wouldn't apply to. So if someone instead had $2 million in a joint account or a brokerage account, I think that's kind of what they would be targeting. And it would be like this December, well, what the intangibles tax used to be, it was December 31st. So sometimes what would happen is people would, you know, like move the money out of like the brokerage account and put it into like a bank account, and maybe that didn't count, or the checking account. So there might be ways that people could, you know, lower their exposure, but quite a bit of assets that people typically own wouldn't be subject to it anyway. So I'm not sure it would go through or not. I can't speak on whether it's legal or not, but I mean, I know we used to have one because I used to have to worry about that for clients. It was probably 35 years ago. I'd have to look it up to see, but.
Well, you know, I'm retired, so I mm-hmm. wanted to know how it would affect a retirement account.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my assets are in a lot of different categories.
Right, and I love that. But yeah, it's not going to hit, well, I'm talking off the top of my head because I don't I didn't look at all the details of that. I've heard about it already, yes, before you called. But again, I thought, well, you know, we'll see if that ever goes through. Not sure it would go through. I could see them, you know, raising other kinds of taxes instead. You know, many of the jurisdictions, the municipalities raise their local income tax. We have a local earned income tax. So people who are working, you know, many of the municipalities are paying like 1%, but you see other jurisdictions raising. We have a very high city of Allentown tax, and some of the other local municipalities have raised their local earned income tax. So I think there could be other ways that they may try to raise the revenue, but, you know, we kind of have to watch and see. It all depends on, you know, whether that would go through, but it may not have as big of an impact as one might think if your main resource, you know, your main assets are your home, your car, your retirement accounts. So,
okay. The reason I ask is because, you know, we all like to watch our finances, and the Whitehall Copley School District just voted to raise the school tax 4.7%. So, I was kind of doing the math. So, you know, it's a couple hundred bucks every year or whatever. So,
yeah.
But thanks for the information. I just wanted to call and say hi and see if you could answer that question.
Yeah.
But that's good. I'm sure that there's, you know, it's a proposal right now,
right,
you know, from what I asked. So
right.
We'll see what happens.
Right. Well, thank you for calling in. I'm so glad you did. Nice to hear you.
All right. Take care of yourself.
Thanks, Eric. Take care. Bye-bye. Yeah, there's always these things to consider, you know, and that's something, as Eric mentioned, when we have, you know, something new to kind of understand how it might impact you. I have been doing this for so long and have heard about so many different, you know, proposals from time to time. Think back to, you know, what was it? What year are we at? I'm losing track of the years. We had the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in 2017 that was set for 10 years, and everyone understood what that was, and then it was going to sunset in 2026, I believe. It was going to sunset in 2026. So everyone was doing all kinds of planning for that and worrying about it, and one of the provisions in that Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, well, a couple of provisions. One was the federal estate tax was going to go back down to the old rate. So we were already like in 2025, maybe we were like, at, I don't know, 13, 14 million. And it was going to go back down to, with inflation, maybe 6 or 7 million federal estate tax exemption. That's a huge difference. And a lot more people would have been exposed. So all of a sudden, everyone was scrambling to try to do estate planning. The other thing that was supposed to happen is tax rates were supposed to go back up to the old rates. Then people were worried, oh, maybe we should take our gains now. Maybe we should take distributions from retirement accounts now. Again, that's kind of like that fear or that anxiety and scrambling to try to plan for something that we're not sure is going to happen. And we do have to plan with the information we have available at that time. It's true. I mean, we as advisors have to do that all the time. But where I said, you know, sometimes I kind of like to wait to see where the legislation goes. Well, what happened? They extended everything. They extended the federal estate exemption. They made it supposedly permanent. And I will tell you, it's never permanent. Next, you know, administration could change it again. But the federal exemption, if someone had scrambled and done all kinds of planning and rejiggering of their asset titling and everything, worrying about the federal estate tax, they may not have had to do any of that, and the planning may not be appropriate any longer with the exemption as it is. All right, so we kind of got to temper our emotions around these things and stay balanced and pay attention and kind of put our ducks in a row to give ourselves as much flexibility and options that we can with the information that we have available at the time, be able to pivot and that kind of thing. You know, back in the day when there was tax legislation, this is my recollection. You know, we remember what we remember. But back in the day, it always seemed like if there were changes in tax legislation, it would be, you know, like the next year. Or people would be grandfathered. Well, now it's just like the Wild Wild West. They changed the tax legislation on some of these provisions like mid-year. And then it's like, wait a minute, I had done this planning and that didn't apply. And now all of a sudden, you know, I had done planning around these things. Case in point, something like, you know, doing Roth conversions. We used to change our mind. We used to be able to change our mind on those, you know, within a certain period of time by the filing due date. They took that away. So someone might have done a conversion and then all of a sudden they say you can't change your mind anymore. Well, and I don't remember exactly if that would have applied in that case, but that's one of a type of example I would give. So thank you, Eric, for that call. We'll wait and see if that goes through. There might be other methods or ways for them to raise the revenue that they need. So relationships, we talked about really responsibility and capacity and what I meant about that and how that becomes a very important element in our financial planning that is not a number, could end up being a number. Meaning if we feel a certain responsibility for certain, people in our lives, we need to know about that, especially as financial advisors. If all of a sudden you come in and say, hey, there's no way I'm putting mom in a nursing home, I'll cover the cost. That's an impact to you. That's a responsibility. That's an emotion. You feel love for that, you know, family member that you want to take care of them. And it's an impact to your financial situation, which could impact your financial goals. That's a sense of responsibility, right? But there's also those cases where, what if I lose capacity? I said responsibility and capacity in relationships. What if I lose mental capacity? Who's going to step in and take care of me? And are they going to be responsible and able to do that? And what do I mean by that? If I have, you know, $3 million and I've saved all this money and I knew that I could have a potential exposure to some kind of long-term care need, maybe dementia runs in the family or Alzheimer's or something, and I, you know, have no other family members and I pick a favorite nephew to be my power of attorney or my healthcare power of attorney, and, you know, they're a good for nothing and I didn't realize it, you know, you got to do some, you know, exploring, interviewing, questioning, you know, without telling them that you're going to, you know, potentially name them as an agent. What you don't want to happen is if in some event you have and you've lost capacity, and it might just be a temporary capacity. Maybe you're in an accident, you have a concussion and you're in a coma for like, or not concussion wouldn't cause a coma, but you're in a coma for maybe a month or something. You want the people who are having to make the decisions for you to be responsible in what they are doing for you. You know, you don't want them to liquidate all your assets or, you know, impoverish you on the thought like, oh, golly, you know, all these assets that, you know, Aunt Lori saved up are going to go to the nursing home. And we don't want that to happen. So I'm going to impoverish her. And sometimes in that impoverishment, what they're doing is they're liquidating everything and having huge tax consequences. And in the end, you know, there's a look back period on some of that activity and it may have all been for naught. And, you know, the niece or nephew or whomever I might have appointed could be getting in trouble for that. So it's capacity of that agent that you're choosing. It's the capacity of you yourself. Did you plan for, you know, whether you're incapacitated or not? What are you going to do? Who are you going to have around you? You know, you're fortunate if you have a spouse. You're more fortunate if you have responsible children who are going to help or who are in the area. But not everybody has that. Not everybody has a spouse. Not everybody has children. So who are you going to rely on? You could have great friends, and great friends are family too. And that could sometimes even be better than family. In fact, you might have family that have no responsibility, have no capacity to manage your finances. So capacity doesn't just have to be mental or physical. It could just be the knowledge or the skills to be able to manage a financial situation. So you want to think about that. Then we also want to think about health. Health comes into play in our financial planning as well. Your health, the family members' health. health comes into play with longevity. So when we're doing financial planning, when we're running numbers, we have to ask questions. You know, how long did your parents live? How long did your aunts and uncles live? How long did your grandparents live? Were they smokers? Were they drinkers? Were they exposed to asbestos? You know, there's all kinds of factors that are considered in thinking about longevity. We could all be gone tomorrow, as my mother always says. We could be gone tomorrow. But we still have to be smart about our planning. And typically, if you come from a family that has longevity, then as financial advisors, we really need to plan for that. Particularly if you don't have long-term care and you're self-insuring, we have to make sure we're being smart about how you're using your assets during your lifetime in the event we have to make sure you have enough to cover long-term care in the end. Folks, we're at the last break. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. We have Jen in the studio. If you have questions, you can give her a call at 610-758-8810. You can give your question to her and she'll bring it in to me. But if you're comfortable talking live on air, we can do that as well, as Eric did. Again, 610-758-8810. We got about 13 minutes left. We're talking tonight about a twist on the elements of financial planning, and it's kind of the emotions around financial planning, the relationships in financial planning, your health in financial planning, the health of you, the health of your family members, and health can be physical health, mental health, emotional health. Okay, it can be any of those, and those could impact the planning that you're doing. Again, health could be anxiety. You know, if you have a child that you want to leave, you know, all your money to, and they have, you know, a history of anxiety or depression, you know, that might be something you need to consider in your planning. Maybe you don't want to, you know, hand over $1 million or $2 million or $500,000 or whatever it might be. If you have a child or a partner or an heir that perhaps would not be in a position to make good decisions with it and or could be manipulated by people. You could have some, you know, family members or heirs who are, I wish I could pick the word, I'm a little tired tonight, but who would be influenced, you know, by bad people. So, you know, health can mean any number of things. And then, of course, we can always talk about extenuating circumstances. So when we're talking, again, it might not just be about the numbers. It's some of these personal things. And quite often, these are the things that are often hard to talk about. It could be that we have children who have substance abuse issues, who have emotional issues, children who may be gambling. And it's not just children. It could be our partners. It could be our, you know, our spouses who might have been influenced unduly from circumstances that have just gotten out of control for them. You know, sometimes, you know, you can have a very responsible person and then all of a sudden circumstances in their life just set them off on a different trajectory. And all of a sudden you find out that that person that you had all that faith in is spending money wildly, or they're gambling, or they're, you know, shopping, becoming a shopaholic. Some of these events get triggered by other events that happen in our life. So there could be extenuating circumstances. And quite often what I find is people sometimes are reluctant to share them, reluctant to talk about it. It could be embarrassment. It could be privacy. It could be that they don't trust, you know, and they don't know what it means. But unless, you know, and when you're working with a financial advisor, unless you're sharing those things, it's hard to kind of plan around those or understand what your options might be, because there are often a lot of options. I will tell folks when I hear them tell, you know, some of these very intimate details about family members, I say, listen, if you work with a good attorney, they can write great documents that can kind of help put some flexibility in your planning. So, for example, if you have a child that perhaps has made some really bad decisions and you have some major concerns about this and their ability to manage money in the future, trusts are great options for that. And it's amazing what attorneys can put in those trust documents as far as, you know, planning for a change in circumstance. So if perhaps you have a child who may have had a history of substance abuse, but they've gotten on the straight and narrow, and but you still have that fear, that anxiety, that concern, if you're as a parent, that what if they go back? What if they do this again? Well, sometimes, you know, our children just need maturity. Sometimes they just need time. Sometimes they need the right partner, and they can work their counseling, and they can work themselves through those, you know, tough years and really, you know, become responsible and do a good job. Well, if you have perhaps a trust document that you've written saying to my children and to Bobby, who, you know, I've had some concerns with, we're going to put his money in trust. And you have a trustee who, you know, is aware of these details, aware of the history. And that trust document can say income to Bobby during his lifetime. Principal is needed for health, education, maintenance, and support, but at the discretion of the trustee. That trustee then has some flexibility. They can say, well, you know, Bobby's not doing any better. You know, mom and dad are gone now and he went off the deep end. Then that trustee might say, we're going to hold off, because perhaps Bobby has children and maybe you're not necessarily having to preserve the funds for Bobby, who would go through them all. You might want to preserve the funds for Bobby's children. So that trustee, that the language can give a lot of flexibility. And on the, you know, conversely, the language might say, at any time, if the trustee feels this person has, you know, exhibited, you know, responsibility and is doing better, they have discretion on distributing, you know, more amount, you know, like it could be just the principal or could distribute all of it. So when you take that decision out of the hands of that beneficiary and give it to an independent trustee, could be a sibling, could be, you know, a sibling of that beneficiary, it could be your sibling, whomever it might be, you kind of have that decision-making at their discretion. You know, you have more kind of control over what ends up happening with that. So extenuating circumstances, children, grandchildren, some people worry about equalizing. You know, I hear this all the time. We have three kids. One's really super successful. They do really, really well. Then we have that middle child who's an artist. They're just the sweetest soul on the earth. They're so wonderful and, you know, love them to death, but they make no money. And then our youngest child, we're not sure where they're going. So we could have a circumstance where we have three children. And if we equalized, maybe one child super wealthy already, and they're going to get like one third of our wealth. Should we equalize? Well, it's up to you. I mean, you know, these are conversations that you have to have if you're married and, you know, your partner, you're talking about your children together. These are things that you might have to think through. And you can always include the children in these conversations, too. I can't tell you how often I hear maybe children who would otherwise inherit say, you know what, I don't need it. I don't need it. So, you know, do what you want. Maybe middle sister is the one who stayed home or stayed local and ended up taking care of mom and dad all the time. You know, then the other two siblings might not care if it's not equal. So you know, that could be something that does come up often, where people worry about equalizing. And that could be equalizing at death. It could be equalizing during lifetime if you're gifting. So these are some of the kinds of considerations that come into financial planning that may not always be the numbers. It could be the, you know, emotions around some of these circumstances. Again, extenuating circumstances, as I indicated, could also come from, you know, fears, anxiety, or, you know, exuberance. As I mentioned earlier, that client who was giving all that money to his son to buy rental real estate, there was some exuberance there. They just thought this was the hottest deal. This was, again, many, many years ago. The hottest deal, they had to get into it, and it was impulsive, really. So exuberance could also be impulsiveness. And we have to be aware of our blind spots on that. Are we impulsive? Are we exuberant? Are we, you know, anxiety ridden that we can't make a decision? So not only reflecting on these kind of elements for ourselves in our financial planning decision making, but also reflecting on these elements amongst the people that we have around us that are going to be impacted by our financial planning, whether helping us with it or benefiting from it. And I do want to mention something about philanthropy as well. You know, philanthropy, when I talk about philanthropy, it's charitable giving. And sometimes I worry when people may be taken advantage of in, you know, charitable request as well. And my little story here is we had a client who also was working into her 70s. She was giving so much money to the church, she had to continue to work just so she could have the cash flow to pay for her own living expenses. It broke my heart. And it, you know, it didn't matter what I said, as far as, you know, you can give it to them when you're gone, meaning make sure you have the money you need during your lifetime. And then when you're gone, you could give it. And, you know, there are people who definitely can give during lifetime, and I have no problem with it when they're of wealth and they have the means, no problem. But there are those circumstances where one may not have really the financial means to handle their own cash flow or their own cash needs as they go into the retirement years. So you want to be careful and cognizant of those requests for charitable giving, to make sure that it makes sense for you. There are, you know, times where a nonprofit, you know, I'm thinking of a church in particular, that, you know, they love you, they want you, they want your money, they, you know, say they're going to come to your house, they don't. And, you know, they want your capital campaign contribution. And then, you know, you fall by the wayside. They completely forget about you in your time of need. So just be careful that you're watching out for those kinds of, I don't want to say manipulations, because I don't mean to intend that is what nonprofits do, because I love nonprofits. I love nonprofits. I really do. I'm very charitable. But there are people where it's not really appropriate for them financially to be giving in their excess. There are, because they have no excess. That's what I mean. It's one thing to give from your excess. It's another if you don't have the means. So beware of that. And that comes into emotions as well. It could be guilt, and or, you know, wanting connections. You hear those stories where people get those spam calls and, you know, people are befriending the elderly and, you know, come see me, I love you, I need help, and, you know, you're so wonderful. And sometimes the elderly are so happy to be able to have someone to talk to. And the next thing you know, they're going to their bank, emptying their bank account and, you know, putting it in a Bitcoin machine or, you know, buying credit cards at the drugstore. So kind of be aware of some of these things. But that really is minor issues. The greater elements that I really wanted to focus on tonight that flow into the considerations for financial planning, the cash flow, the investments, the taxes, the retirement planning, risk management, and estate planning, are all of the twist on the financial planning, where we talk about the emotions, emotions of love, anxiety, fear, exuberance, the relationships, what's the responsibility we have to others, what responsibility do they have to us? We might think our kids are going to help us, but maybe they're not. And you need to be aware of that. Maybe your kids think you're going to help them, and maybe you're not, and they need to be aware of that. And then, of course, understanding how responsible they would be in helping and who has capacity and what is that capacity. And, of course, understanding health of yourself, your spouse, your family members, relatives, partners, whatever it might be, and sharing those extenuating circumstances, because it could be really important to know those for your financial advisor in ways that they can help you navigate that. So thank you, Jen, for being here. Thank you, Eric, for calling. And thank you, listeners. Thank you, James. Next week, we're going to do financial planning considerations for children. I'm going to talk about the nuances of some of that, earnings, investment income, education funding, kiddie tax. So we'll see where that takes us. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.